This is On the Tee, brought to you by Canteen Vodka Soda. Ready to drink, ready to go. Now here's your host, Anita Marks, on 98.7 ESPN.
Always a fun show to do. Always fun to sit in for Anita Marks, and it's Pat O'Keefe doing so on this Sunday morning, Labor Day weekend. Hope it's off to a good start for everyone. The last Sunday until February without football. And it very much, in the absence of football, is a golf Sunday because there's plenty of golf to talk about. A lot of topics we want to get into in this portion of the show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by PGA Tour Superstores. Shop with the pros at your local New York and New Jersey area PGA Tour Superstores and save $20 off your purchase of $100 or more by mentioning 98.7 ESPN at checkout. Exclusions apply. See website for exclusion details. We got Ty Butler producing the show as always this morning. Good to have you along, Ty. We've got the Tour Championship going on right now. This weekend, final round coming up at East Lake Golf Club in Atlanta. And then shortly after that, middle of this week, Steve Stricker has to name his captain's picks for the Ryder Cup, which is coming up in 3 weeks. And of course, we all know this century that the United States has had a lot of trouble competing in the Ryder Cup. It'll be on our home soil this year, Whistling Straits, September 24th through 26th out in Wisconsin. Europe has won 4 of the last 5 Ryder Cups, 9 of the last 12 Ryder Cups, and the last one, which was actually 3 years ago, they were supposed to play it last year, and of course that was canceled or pushed back because of the pandemic. The last Ryder Cup that was contested was one of the biggest routs in history as Europe beat the United States 17.5 to 10.5. So we'll get into that. We have our usual guests, and we'll get their thoughts. John Mascari, the director of golf at Alpine Country Club. Christina Thompson, the owner of Golf for Her. We have the Tour Championship, as I mentioned. We also have the Solheim Cup going on in Toledo. We're going to get Christina's thoughts on that. A really, really interesting, controversial, and maybe Solheim Cup turning rules decision made yesterday that we'll talk about with Christina and get her perspective on that. I'll explain it in just a minute. But let's start with the Tour Championship. It's basically boiling down to a two-man race. And the interesting thing about this is the two guys competing for the Tour Championship are also two of, if not the top two candidates for the PGA Tour Player of the Year, Patrick Cantlay and Jon Rahm. And isn't that exactly what the FedEx Cup was designed to do? Right, we wanted to obviously add the monetary incentive for winning the Tour Championship, or actually winning the overall FedEx Cup, which they certainly have done. The winner today receives $15 million, and the runner-up receives $5 million. So it's between Cantlay, who's -20 right now, and Rahm, who's -18. It's a $10 million difference between first and second place in the final round of the Tour Championship today. I know none of these guys are hurting for money, but still, that is a very, very significant difference between finishing first and finishing second. But because Rahm and Cantlay, and if you want to throw Justin Thomas in there too, because he's only 5 strokes back at -15 and had a very, very good third round yesterday. Unfortunately for Thomas, he bogeyed the final hole. He came in at 65, 5 under par. Had he not bogeyed that final hole, he'd be at -16. He'd be 4 shots off the pace, and things would be very interesting. But you can't count Justin Thomas out just yet. But more so, perhaps, than the $10 million difference, which is obviously nice, you have Rahm and Cantlay almost going head-to-head for the PGA Tour Player of the Year. They both have excellent resumes. Now, Cantlay's interesting that he is in the mix for the PGA Tour Player of the Year because usually the guy who wins that has won at least one major, and Cantlay has not. If he wins the Tour Championship, that's close to a major, but not a major. But Cantlay right now is the only player on tour who has actually won 3 tournaments this year. So if he wins today at the Tour Championship, that would be 4. That would be 2 more than anyone else has won all year, even though he hasn't won a major. Now, Rahm, on the other hand, is such an interesting story. Now, Jon Rahm won the U.S. Open, and do we remember what happened before he won the U.S. Open? It was late May. He was competing in the Memorial. He was really starting to hit his stride. He had a 6-stroke lead at the Memorial in the third round. He was running away from the field, and he tested positive for COVID-19, and he was taken off the course, and he had to withdraw that event. So he went from, look, he was most likely going to win, barring a collapse, especially the way he was playing. If he didn't win, top five finish was almost assured, and instead he got nothing out of that weekend. So when the voting is done and the decision is made for the PGA Tour Player of the Year, how will that be factored in? And you want to know the most interesting thing about that? Do you know who actually went on to win the Memorial? It was Patrick Cantlay. So how much will that be factored in? Yeah, Cantlay's being given credit, and rightfully so, because he did win three events this season. But one of them was literally because the guy he is competing with for the Player of the Year award was taken off the course with a six-stroke lead. So you have the final round from Eastlake Golf Club in Atlanta, their par 70 course coming up. Cantlay started the week because of the FedEx Cup standings. It's weighted as you enter that final round. So Cantlay started the week at 10 under par. Rahm started the week four strokes behind. So Rahm, through the first three rounds, is actually two strokes better than Patrick Cantlay. So how will they factor that in also, right? If Cantlay ends up winning the Tour Championship by two, which is the lead right now, or if he wins it by one, well, Rahm would have actually outperformed Cantlay this week, even though Cantlay would have won this overall event. So it's going to be very interesting. I think the FedEx Cup has been great. I mean, the BMW the week before with Cantlay and Bryson DeChambeau was fantastic, Dieter, and it came at a perfect time. And that's what the PGA Tour and that's what the FedEx Cup has been able to do. They've been able to place these events, you know, at the perfect time, right before the start of football season. So it doesn't get buried going up against the NFL on Sundays. It's over and done with today. You know, and then we move on because the golf does continue. Then we move on to trying to figure out this Ryder Cup situation, which is always a question mark and seems to, no matter what we try to do as far as the American side goes, nothing seems to work year after year after year. You know, how many times have we heard in the last 15, 16 years? It's a fresh start. It's a new approach. This new captain is going to take a different look at things. We're not just going to bring the top players. We're going to bring the guys who play together like the European squad does. And every year it seems to lead to the same exact result, which is the United States losing. And in many cases, like the most recent example in 2018, the United States losing badly. So when we come back on the Tee with Anita Marks, we'll take a look at the Ryder Cup, some potential names who could fill out those final captain's pick slots. And I do want to get into this Solheim Cup situation before we bring Christina Thompson on later in the hour, because it was really interesting how this all played out. A potential momentum-shifting rules enforcement yesterday in the first day of the Solheim Cup. So it's
On the Tee with Anita Marks. Brought to you by Canteen Vodka Soda. Ready to drink, ready to go on 98.7 ESPN.
And a good Sunday morning to everyone out there. It's Pat O'Keefe in for Anita, getting our Sunday going. And all right, here's your shot to win a four-pack of any day grounds passes to the LPGA's Cognizant Founders Cup at Mountain Ridge Country Club in West Caldwell, New Jersey, October 6th through the 10th. Be the first caller right now at 888-987-ESPN to win. It's all courtesy of Prospero Tequila, a tequila that embodies the power of the female spirit, crafted by Stella Anguiano, one of Mexico's most distinguished female master distillers, direct from Jalisco, Mexico, 100% blue agave. Please enjoy responsibly. So give us a call right now. It's Pat O'Keefe in for Anita on the Tee on this Sunday morning with Anita Marks. Some thoughts, one final thought on the PGA Tour Player of the Year race. And coming up at the bottom of the hour, John Mascari, the director of golf for Alpine Country Club, will join me. I'll get his thoughts on where that stands right now in his mind. You know, if you asked me a month ago, I would have thought Colin Morikawa would have run away with this thing. I mean, the way that he showed out at the Open Championship in late July by winning his second major in less than a calendar year. And then he goes on to the Olympics with all the momentum in the world. And something happened at the Tokyo Olympics to Morikawa. He says that he tweaked his back during Olympics play. He almost came away with the bronze medal. He missed out on a bronze in a playoff. So since then, he says he rushed back for the first event following the Olympics. During that, he finished 26th. After that, the FedEx Cup, he missed the cut in the first event at the Northern Trust, finished 63rd the following week. So he fell from first place in the FedEx Cup standings at the beginning of the FedEx Cup all the way down to 11th coming into this week. And he hasn't played great this week either. Right now, he is tied for 22nd overall at -2, and he is a 1 over par through the first three rounds this week. So that's interesting because I feel like, you know, if Morikawa had stayed on top of the standings through these final three events and put up obviously better results than what he's done, I mean, he missed the cut in one of the events, he would have been a clear candidate, if not the favorite, for the PGA Tour Player of the Year as well. Now, he's likely played himself out of that, and he's also a guy that you have to take a look at, especially considering he says he tweaked his back. How healthy is he for the Ryder Cup? Because, I mean, look, there are a few guys, if any, more important to the United States Ryder Cup team than Colin Morikawa. So Wednesday, Steve Stricker needs to make his captain's pick. So here's how it stands right now. The top six, these are the guys that are going. Morikawa, Bryson DeChambeau, Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, and Patrick Cantlay. That's a really good top six. But there's issues there. I just mentioned the Morikawa thing. And then yesterday, Koepka withdrew in the third round of the Tour Championship. He injured his wrist after striking a tree root on the 10th hole. He tried to continue. He played two more holes before officially withdrawing. And the interesting thing with Koepka that you have to keep an eye on, in the 2017-2018 seasons, he dealt with a wrist injury to the same wrist. So, look, the Ryder Cup is 3 weeks away. Wrist injuries for golfers obviously never sound good. So that's certainly something to keep an eye on. So when you look on paper at the top six names for the United States team, it looks really good. But now Morikawa's nicked up a little bit. Brooks Koepka's got this wrist thing. So that's something to monitor. Then the next bucket of guys, you've got Xander Schauffele, the Olympic gold medalist, who's likely to be a captain's pick. Tony Finau, he's in the mix every single week. He's likely to be a captain's pick. Jordan Spieth, you know, he's so close to being back to the Jordan Spieth from 4 years ago, and it's really fun to watch. So he's likely to be there. Harris English has, in many people's mind, joined that crew. So that's four of the six captain's picks that are available. And then a bunch of the other guys that are still up for grabs or in contention to get on the Ryder Cup team are playing today. So, yeah, you look at the top of the scoreboard at the Tour Championship at Eastlake Golf Club, and the Cantlay, Rahm, Justin Thomas thing is interesting to see who's going to win the FedEx Cup, who's going to walk away with $15 million. The bottom of the scoreboard, remember there's only 29 players competing now that Koepka has withdrawn. The bottom of the scoreboard is really interesting too. I shouldn't even say the bottom, because there's guys near the top of the scoreboard like Kevin Na, who has moved all the way up to fourth place in the Tour Championship standings at 13 under par. He has a chance to make a final impression on Steve Stricker. Jason Kokrak is 16th at -5 overall. You got Scottie Scheffler in the mix. He's in a tie for 17th place with Sam Burns, another American who could be considered. Patrick Reed is interesting because he's been sick lately. He rushed back to play the Tour Championship because he wants to be on the Ryder Cup team. And say what you want about Patrick Reed, that says a lot about Patrick Reed in my mind. I mean, look, when he's healthy, he is one of the 12 best American golfers and deserves, in my opinion, a spot on the Ryder Cup team. But he's been dealing with illness lately, comes back so he can be considered to show that he's healthy for the Ryder Cup team. I think that says a lot for a guy like Patrick Reed. So it's going to be interesting to watch some of these guys. Daniel Berger is towards the bottom of the leaderboard at the Tour Championship, but he's among the top 29 still standing. He shot a 67 yesterday, so we'll see if he can make a final impression today. So it's very interesting. But the Morikawa thing, Morikawa and Koepka, but especially Morikawa, because ever since the Olympics, Morikawa's season has taken a little bit of a turn. I mean, he was on top of the world heading to Tokyo. I mean, he was the toast of everything heading to Tokyo. The PGA Tour Championship last season, the Open Championship this season, and since then, due to a back injury that he apparently sustained in Tokyo at the Olympics, has kind of come back to earth a little. Now, the Solheim Cup going on right now at the Inverness Club in Toledo. After day one, Europe has a pretty sizable lead over the United States. It's 5.5 points to 2.5 points. Now, it could be worse. Nelly Kota, our best player, is lining up for a birdie putt, a long birdie putt. on the 13th hole. It's a four-ball competition. It's a tied match. Terrific putt. It rolls and rolls and rolls and settles on the lip of the putt. The lip of the cup. And that's where things get interesting. It's clearly a gimme, okay? Her European opponent walks up after, let's say, 5 or 6 seconds, picks it up, and tosses the ball back to Nelly, okay? Sportsmanship, it's common. We've seen it. You're conceding the putt. It's a gimme putt. It's the definition of a gimme putt. The only thing is, you have to wait 10 seconds to allow that ball the chance to fall into the cup. And the European opponent did not. So there was a lot of conversation about it. It looked pretty clear cut at first. She just missed. In my opinion, and I didn't see this live, but I watched the video a bunch this morning. In my opinion, the ball was not going to fall into the cup. That's just my opinion. Now we'll see if Christina Thompson saw it differently. I mean, she's hit a lot more putts that have landed that close to the cup than I have. I don't know if I ever have. We'll see what she has to say about that. So what ends up happening is they give the hole to the American team. It was going to be a split hole. Instead, the Americans got the point for the hole. They went one up, and they were able to maintain that lead the rest of the match. So that was a huge momentum shift, and that was a huge point, because the United States could have been down 6-2, 6.5-1.5. I mean, Europe could have had a chance to run away from it if Korda doesn't get rewarded that hole. So the morning session did not go well for the United States. They only were able to manage a half a point out of the four that were awarded. It was 3.5-1.5. So we'll see what has to change today for the U.S. in the Solheim Cup. So you got that going on right now in the Inverness Club in Toledo. Look, it's on our home soil. And historically, as you would expect in the Solheim Cup, the home team performs very well. The home team has won 12 out of 16 competitions since the first Solheim Cup in 1990. So we'll get Christina Thompson's thoughts on that coming up in a little bit. Coming up next, John Mascari, the director of golf of Alpine Country Club, on everything going on in men's golf. And Canteen is a refreshing, ready-to-drink vodka soda in a can. It's packable, portable for refreshment that doesn't shirk on flavor, and it's crafted with real vodka, which means zero sugar and no carbs, with a variety of all-American flavors. It's simple, sturdy, flavor-forward refreshment in a can that is ready to drink and ready to go wherever your adventure takes you, from the golf course to the beach and anywhere in between. Learn more at drinkcanteen.com. Drink better with Canteen. Must be 21 or older. Always enjoy responsibly.
On the Tee with Anita Marks. Brought to you by Canteen Vodka Soda. Ready to drink. Ready to go on 98.7 ESPN.
It is time now for John Mascari, the director of golf at Alpine Country Club, brought to you by Canteen Vodka Soda. Ready to drink, ready to go. You know, it's funny, John, every time I have you on, I'm waiting for a slow spot in the golf calendar. It hasn't happened yet, and this week is no exception. How you doing?
Good, man. Good morning. Yeah, the super season rolls on, and we're at the culmination of it right now with the Tour Championship, and it's certainly not disappointing, that's for sure.
It's shaping up to be a two-man race between Cantlay and Rahm. You know, Thomas is only 5 strokes back. He could make things interesting. How have you seen this thing shake out so far?
Well, it seems like the BMW Championship version of Patrick Cantlay is back, at least yesterday, when he seemed to be pouring in every putt he looked at least on the front nine. And that could be trouble for the rest of the field. But John Rahm has made up the ground. You know, he started out 4 shots off the lead before the tournament even started with the staggered start, but has now got it down to 2. And listen, a bogey and a birdie real quick in the beginning, and it's a tie ball game. So it should be a must-watch golf for everyone today with these two going at it, trading punch for punch at Eastlake.
Yeah, something that Cantlay, as you mentioned, did last week at the BMW. You know, the way he performed there, especially down the stretch, and then the way he's performing right now, just, you know, talk about what he's done to kind of finish this season with a flourish.
Well, you know, he's always been a great ball striker. I've been really surprised by his off-the-tee game of late. He's playing real well off the tee, which sets him up well coming into the greens. But, you know, as I mentioned before, it's the putter. It's, you know, the putter is the great equalizer. It breeds confidence. It makes for less stress, as those who are listening and our golfers know. If you can get your putter going, everything else seems to kind of fall into place. but it also hides a lot of issues. You know, you could miss a green and chip it up and have to make a 15 footer and it's in. And when you're putting so well, and you know, that's the most important club in your bag, makes the game a lot easier. So, and for you and I, it's a big improvement, but for guys like this, when you get their putter going, they feel like they can make anything as long as they're on the green.
Well, in the case of today, it could be worth $10 million extra dollars too, which is nice also. we got John Mascari, the director of golf at Alpine Country Club. He does a great job breaking things down regarding the tour. How about Justin Thomas? It would have been really interesting if he was able to par that final hole yesterday. Then he'd come in just four strokes off the lead. But can he turn this into a three-man race today?
Yeah, that was some amazing golf yesterday. Five threes in a row on his card on the back nine. As you mentioned, gets to number 18, which is, frankly, a hole that you should birdie. And a lot of the field will make birdie on that. So he certainly gave it back on 18. And you kind of think about him coming in after that and sleeping on that, knowing, God, if I just made a par or a birdie there, you know, here I would be 16 or 17 under and really in the mix. But five shots is maybe a little bit on the outside. It's going to take a 63 from him today, and the other two gentlemen have to kind of fall back a little bit, which might be tough, but never say never in golf. If we learned anything in the last few weeks, you're never really out of it until the flag goes in on 18 at the end.
So in addition to the Tour Championship and the overall FedEx Cup and the $15 million check that goes with it, John, what you're hearing is Cantlay and Rahm are, if not the top two candidates for Player of the Year, they're both on the shortlist for the Player of the Year, which adds even more intrigue to this final round. But regarding the Player of the Year, is that how you see it? Are those your top two candidates, or do you throw others in that mix?
If you were to ask me that question a few weeks ago, I probably would have said, yeah, there's a few other players in the mix. But at this point right now, I think this is for the Player of the Year. The person who comes out today is going to win your Player of the Year. Obviously, both guys have had great seasons. Rahm only one victory, unfortunately. As you know, he had a back out of the Memorial with a huge lead coming into round four. But the U.S. Open Championship, and this would certainly be a culmination for him of a fantastic season. But the same goes for Cantlay. So, really a lot of high drama, a lot of storylines coming into this last round, but I think it's a two-man race on the course and on the standings.
Winning the Player of the Year without winning a major is pretty rare, isn't it?
It is. It is pretty rare, but it speaks to the way that Cantlay's been playing all season, especially of late, and has been around the top of the leaderboard or near the top of the leaderboard for most of the season. But you could say the same thing with Rahm. I mean, gosh, he's like a top 10 machine. I'd even say a top 5 machine the way he's playing. And just the one victory on his record is almost unfortunate. You hate to say it's like the Jacob deGrom. Your stats are fantastic, but your wins and your they don't match. But I'd love to see Rahm take this home today, but it's not going to be something Patrick Cantlay is going to give up very easily.
Well, what happened to Rahm at the Memorial that you alluded to was so interesting, and you wonder how much they'll factor that in. And then you add to the fact that Cantlay was the one who actually won the Memorial. So that one positive COVID test could have swung the whole Player of the Year thing.
Yeah, I don't think the fact that he had to withdraw should be taken into effect on the Player of the Year. I mean, he had to withdraw. It's what it was. And it was unfortunate. You know, he had a 6-shot lead coming in, and I think the whole world would have known that he probably would have taken that to the bank. But one man's garbage is another man's treasure, I guess. So Patrick Cantlay came in and then beat Morikawa in the Memorial, which is a huge event.
Yeah, and
as you're just laser focus on today.
And yeah, as you mentioned, Rahm still has a very good chance today. You mentioned Morikawa. And a month ago, and I said this earlier, when the list of Player of the Year candidates was greater than two, Morikawa was clearly in that group as well, what he did in the Open Championship. And then he tweaks his back at the Olympics, and he just hasn't seemed to be the same since then. Are you concerned about him, especially heading into the Ryder Cup?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, he's got, another maybe 2.5 weeks to get ready for the Ryder Cup, so I'll take it easy for them. But he's certainly obviously hurting. You could see by the way he's playing, and I think he'd be the first one to tell you that he's not 100%. So, yeah, he was kind of plugging along real well. A fantastic British Open win. But, as all golfers know, when you have a back injury, it can really really affect you in a negative way. So let's hope he rests up and bounces back for Team USA.
All right, speaking of Team USA, the captain's picks are due on Wednesday for the Ryder Cup. The competition itself begins 3 weeks from this weekend. Those six captain's picks that are up for grabs, and some of them are pretty clear-cut, I would think, but how do you see them filling out those slots, John?
Yeah, I think you make a great point. You could say that there's six spots, but in my opinion, there's really maybe only two, and we'll see what happens with Brooks Koepka in the next few weeks, but I think Tony Finau, I think Xander Schauffele coming off the gold medal is a lock as well. Jordan Spieth has been playing fantastic as well. I think he's a lock for the team. I think he's currently sitting ninth in the rankings. I find it hard to leave Harris English off the team after the year that he's had with two victories. When you look at those last two spots, and you know, you throw names like Sam Burns, Webb Simpson, Scottie Scheffler, Daniel Berger, who in my opinion should be a lock on that team as well. He's been fantastic this season. I can't believe he's 12th on the rankings. And then you have someone like Patrick Reed, who thrives in these environments, but you know, coming off the double pneumonia that landed him in the hospital during the BMW and not playing that well at Eastlake. And you know, you have to maybe think about even someone like maybe Kevin Na, who might sneak in and get some consideration. So going to be interesting to see what Captain Stricker does on Wednesday when he finalizes the team. Like I said, I think there's really maybe one or two true spots that are open, and they'll put the team together and get ready to go to Whistling Straits.
You mentioned Daniel Berger. He shot a 67 yesterday. He's currently tied for 22nd in the Tour Championship. Make the case for him based on the season that he's had.
Yeah, one win. I think he's got eight top tens on the season. Yeah, he's missed two cuts the entire year, which is fantastic. 13 top 25s. And here's an interesting one. He's seventh on the tour in scoring average. So he's had a really good season, strong all the way around. Great opportunity for him. It's going to be really good to see some new blood on a Ryder Cup team. I think it's important for our country to kind of get away from the Phils and maybe some of the guys that have been there a while. And give the responsibility to some new blood. So Daniel Berger, guys like Spieth, Schauffele, I think will be on the team. You know, the Patrick Reed situation is interesting, and we'll see what happens. It's a good problem to have, let's put it that way.
Let's hope so. I mean, because look, let's be honest. We're talking with John Mascari, the director of golf at Alpine Country Club. I mean, every two, or in this case, 3 years, we hear about the fresh approach and the fresh start. And John, it seems like the same story every year. Europe's won 9 out of the last 12. The last one in 2018 wasn't even close, 17.5 to 10.5. They've won 4 out of the last 5. I mean, I agree with you. I'm really excited to see some new blood or some fresh blood on the American side this time. How can things be different with this new young crop of American stars?
Well, I think you have to give them the opportunities to shine. You have to give them the opportunities to be in the spotlight. You know, for even though we've had some of these guys on the teams before, it's always been Phil, and there's always been, you know, Tiger, and some of the names that have carried the Ryder Cup teams for years and years and years. And, you know, I know Phil is now a vice captain or assistant captain, but you know, the thought of even him being on the team, I thought was even just a bad idea for that. Give people opportunities. You'll be surprised who rises to the occasion, and you go from there. I mean, that's the same way that happens with Europe is, you know, they'll put on a few guys that are maybe not from who you'd think. They put a few guys on the team, like, gosh, Molinari, who was not really that well-known when he was fresh on the Ryder Cup team, and maybe someone like Fleetwood, and they rise to the occasion when the spotlight is on them. So let's give these guys an opportunity to be there and to lead Team USA, and let's see what happens. Let's not continue to lean on the old guys.
So role players, right? We need role players. Every sport has them, John. We need them in golf.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Overall, though, I mean, between the BMW Championship last weekend and that great finish between Cantlay and Bryson, and, you know, the way that the Tour Championship is shaping up today, this two-man race with the $15 million check, which was the original incentive, you add into that the fact that, as you said, John, these are the top two candidates, Rahm and Cantlay, for Player of the Year. I mean, this has to be exactly what the Tour envisioned by developing this FedEx Cup.
Yeah, you know, they've been putting it through the ringer for years about how to tweak it here and tweak it there. And they've been trying to figure out the best way to have a playoff system. And I don't think it's that bad. And this is a perfect example of what they want, you know, but you look back and there were years when it was the opposite, right? You had DJ winning the FedEx and Schauffele won the tournament. So, you know, there's opportunities, they thought, to try to fix that. And we've been blessed with the finish this year that they've had, but there could still be some tweaks, I feel, to the FedEx Cup playoffs, maybe changing the point system throughout the season where it's more weighted on the strength of the field. I think would be a good opportunity. Listen, that may upset some of the sponsors of quote-unquote lesser events to get a good crowd in. Maybe a smaller starting field. Is some people would say that 125 into the first round is a little high. Maybe do it like an NCAA tournament where it's the top 64, then you get to 32 and 16. You kind of whittle it down after every event. That might be fun. I don't mind, you know, a lot of people are talking about the staggered start. I really don't mind it, to be completely honest. I think it's almost like home field advantage in the playoffs for other sports. You get that extra game at home. But I think they're doing okay. I don't think it's as bad as everyone cracks it up to me. I don't think it's that bad.
I agree. I like the staggered start. I think you should be rewarded for better play leading into the Tour Championship, and that's exactly what that's doing. John, let me get you out of here on this. You mentioned the Ryder Cup. If we're going to pencil in Schauffele, Finau, Spieth, English, four of those six captains' picks, you're Steve Stricker right now. Who are you giving those final, or who are you awarding it those final two slots to?
I'm definitely giving one to Berger. He deserves to be on that team. And if he's feeling okay, I'm giving it to Patrick Reed, just because of what he brings to the environment, what he brings to the team from a attitude and intensity, and I think it would be good. I mean, we have the home crowd. They'll get behind him, you know, Captain America nickname. And, boy, we need to win this Ryder Cup. We need to right the ship. So should be interesting. It's one of my favorite events. The PGA of America does a great job with it, and Whistling Straits is going to be awesome and a great venue. So looking forward to that.
It's one of the events, best events in the entire sports calendar, so it should be fun. Tour Championship final round should be fun today, too, as well. John, thanks so much. Great job, as always, and enjoy it.
Thank you. Yeah, buckle your seatbelts, everyone. It's going to be a great round four today.
Great round four and a great month. That's John Mascari, the director of golf from Alpine Country Club, brought to you by Canteen Vodka Soda. Canteen is a refreshing, ready-to-drink vodka soda in a can, on the go, on the course, or in your own backyard. Learn more at drinkcanteen.com. Must be 21 or older. Always enjoy responsibly.
On the Tee with Anita Marks. Brought to you by Canteen Vodka Soda. Ready to drink. Ready to go on 98.7 ESPN.
Always great to spend a few minutes with Christina Thompson, the owner of Golf for Her. Christina, good morning. Let's get right into it with the Solheim Cup day one yesterday at Inverness Club in Toledo. And after a slow start for the American side, all the attention seems to be focused on Nelly Korda's birdie putt on the 13th hole in the four-ball competition. It was a tied match. It was a terrific putt that just missed. And why don't you pick it up here, Christina, because that's when things got interesting.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Yeah, it was a crazy first day. You know, I mean, it's not a Solheim Cup without a little controversy, right? So, as you all know, you know, there's a lot of tension when it comes to these types of matches, and you definitely got a little bit of excitement. So, as you mentioned, it was the first match of the afternoon. We had Nelly Korda, Ali Ewing of the U.S. against Madeline Sackstrom and Nana Madsen of Europe, and they're on the par 5, 13th hole. Korda had this beautiful downhill right-to-left breaking 20-footer for eagle, and she hit what appeared to be the perfect putt, and at the very last moment, we've all been there, that ball just kind of like died out right on the edge of the cup. Now, as per the rules of golf, any portion of a ball that is overhanging the hole, the ball is not deemed to be at rest until the player, which in this case would be Nelly, had a reasonable amount of time to get to the ball, to reach the hole, and then there's an additional 10 seconds that you're supposed to wait. You know, it could be an earthquake, it could be a gust of wind that knocks that ball, and I mean, a million things could happen, but you're allowed an extra 10 seconds. But what happened, Madeline Sackstrom, who was super close, she was close to the ball, she was on the putting green, she picked up Korda's ball because from her perspective, it wasn't dropping. And to be honest, after, you know, watching the interviews afterwards, neither player, any of the four players on the green at that time, thought that ball was going to drop in. But it is against the rules of golf to pick up the ball. And it was a little odd that it wasn't even Nelly who picked up the ball. It was Madeline who kind of went over, leaned over, picked up the ball, and tossed it over to Nelly. And that's when the chaos started. And Obviously, nobody wants to win a hole with any kind of controversy, but unfortunately, there was a little bit of controversy. Neither of the players, you know, they didn't intend this to happen, obviously. They're, you know, it's a game of integrity. They all know that. They're not there to, no one's out there cheating or doing anything wrong. But unfortunately, you know, players like Madeline, they've got their whole, they're playing for a team sport, not even themselves right now. And if you've been watching any of the Solheim Cup, you'll realize it is packed with U.S. players right now. And because of travel restrictions, there's not a ton of Europeans that are out there. So to be there and getting some, you know, there's some heckling, and it just became an emotional disaster. But, I mean, we've seen controversies in Solheim Cups before. But unfortunately, there are rules of golf, and you kind of have to follow them, as silly as they may be. So there's a lot of people who voice their opinions on it. Like, come on, the ball wasn't going in. But the rules are the rules, and it, you know, I don't know if it has anything to do with maybe there's not a lot of team tournaments, and that maybe this team competition sometimes is just unusual competition for them. But a lot of these players have played team events in college, and they know the rules. But I don't know, maybe there needs to be some kind of rules review prior to, which I'm sure they do, but maybe they always could use a little bit more rules review. So what are your thoughts on this when you saw it and heard about it?
I read it the same way you did. I did not think the ball was going to fall in. And look, this is the argument for people who are not invested or involved in golf. The casual fan, they think rules like this are silly. But everybody knows year after year when something like this comes up, Christina, there's rules. And golf has always been pretty clear that they enforce the rules, whether they seem silly or not. So I agree with you. I think your take is spot on. But let me ask you this. Even with that bit of misfortune for the European side, because that one point, that one hole going to Nelly's pairing ended up being the difference in that match. Europe still leads 5.5 to 2.5. So they have a pretty decent lead heading into day number two. Talk to me about this American side. Obviously, you know, Nelly Cord is the headliner here, but who needs to make a difference for the American team?
Well, yeah, you know, Nelly's carrying the weight of the team right now. I mean, she's world's number one, right? So there's a lot of pressure on her. So, but, you know, there's a great, the U.S. historically, this past season has been incredibly strong. It is not, you know, if you know the players that are on the team right now, we've got a lot of rookies. We've got, I think, 3 rookies on the team right now. I think they all need to pull their weight. You've got, Patty, there's great team captains. You've got the assistant captains that are out there really trying to motivate them. The girls need to show up today, and they need to play the golf that they've been playing all year round. These are solid players. They have a lot of work to do, but I want to see Lizette Solis. She's out there. She's, you know, one of the vets. This is, I think, her 5th Solheim Cup that she's playing in. She needs, you know, continue playing really well. We have players like, we've got Jessica Korda, who's playing really well. We've got Allie Ewing. Players need to start draining those putts, playing the golf that they know how to play, and get some U.S. points on there. We have a little bit of a deficit that we need to make up for today, and obviously tomorrow's the final day. But I think all these players, I think they can rally together, focus on the game that they have. But, you know, listen, the European team is a super strong team. We've got Leona Maguire, who's one of the first players out of Ireland playing incredible golf. So they've got their work cut out for them, but I think Patty Hearst, she put together a fantastic team, and these girls have been playing well together, and I think we're going to see some incredible golf. They're not off to the best start right now, so hopefully we can turn that around by the afternoon. So lots of golf. Hope everybody tunes in to watch it.
Yeah, absolutely. Underway day number two. Interesting day one, Christina, as you mentioned, not without controversy.
For sure.
Thanks for walking us through that. Enjoy, and it's always good catching up with you.
Absolutely. Have a great afternoon, everyone, and go Team USA.
That's right. Christina Thompson, the owner of Golf for Her on the Solheim Cup, which entering day two, Europe leads the United States 5.5 to 2.5.
On the Tee with Anita Marks. Brought to you by Canteen Vodka Soda. Ready to drink, ready to go on 98.7 ESPN.